Welcome to National Selfie Day.
Is today National Selfie Day? I didn't realize that. It just snuck up on me this year.
They make days up for anything.
Yeah. It's also the first day of summer. We talked about that a little bit yesterday.
Longest day of the year.
It's the longest day. That's what, if there's a sad element.
I'm already
to finally
tired.
Achieving summer, it's that now the days already get shorter. Today's the first day of summer, and you go, oh no, but I'm going to lose a couple minutes a day. That's a little sad. We're also a little bit upset. Well, we're very upset about the loss of Marian Hossa to the Blackhawks for at least a season.
Maybe forever.
Because of a skin condition.
His deal was 2020. Is that what it went to? Dave Ennett is still sticking around. He could have played for several more years.
4 years left on his contract.
Yeah.
He's 38 years old, but he's probably in better shape than a lot of guys
he is,
several
isn't he?
Years
younger.
He
right.
had a great season last year.
But if he's off for a year.
To come back at age 39, no one's right now talking about what lies beyond 2018 for Marian Hossa. And nobody has used the word retirement, but then again, there are advantages for the Blackhawks for him not to retire from salary cap perspective. So, you know, it's just a tough way to see his career interrupted, if not ended.
Yeah. So, all right, a couple questions. Question number one is, how common or how rare is this? Because I don't remember ever hearing about a player missing a season because of a skin condition.
No, it has happened. It's ended some careers. And it's something that it's the way, and we talked to Troy Murray about it a little bit earlier, but it's a combination of perspiration and the equipment, and I mean the jerseys and the sweaters, if you prefer.
Yeah.
And the odd thing is that they just last night, Adidas is now the company that is manufacturing the official jerseys for the National Hockey League,
right.
And they unveiled their brand new jerseys last night, which include, they're supposed to be, what was it, 133% more permeable than the previous jerseys. I'm not quite sure what that means, but
what does that mean? I have no idea what that means.
But they're supposed to be more absorbent and more.
They need to go back to cotton or wool that they originally had. That would
well, but,
it too
but
much.
That's when I mean I remember this being an issue for players in the it's going back to the 70s.
Well, really? Wool was not very comfortable.
Right.
It was itchy, and now it's been like really heavy duty polyester. What about cotton? I'm Lena Horne. Yeah. Oh, I liked wool, not cotton.
Right.
I can't remember.
Lena Horne was a wool girl. That's right.
Who was the cotton girl? Because that's what it should be. And with the new uniforms, is there any chance he could try that out and maybe come off the injured reserve or whatever he's on now?
I haven't heard that suggested, Wendy. I think that one of the issues here is that they were using some heavy-duty medications to try to stop this thing, and apparently not with great results, and the side effects from the medicine causes problems of its own.
Oh,
so,
no.
Perhaps steroids, because I know there are a lot of side effects to being to steroid
sure.
use.
But steroids in and of themselves are a banned substance, so would he be able to take steroids even if it medically
Well, like prednisone, I don't know that that would be considered. It is a type of steroid, but
yeah.
if you're taking it for medical reasons.
I think if it's prescribed
then it's
for
okay.
a specific I don't know the answer to that. But
right.
I don't know if that's what this medicine is.
Right, I'm speculating. I just feel bad for him.
Yeah, I think everybody feels bad for him. He's a great guy. He's been a tremendous player.
Yeah.
Great ambassador for the Blackhawks. He's come here and won three Stanley Cups
right.
towards the tail end of his career, even
right.
though his career may or may not be over. So
Kevin has a question for you.
Dave, do you know if this affects the, you know, protected list for the expansion draft for the Blackhawks now?
Well, he was protected. So I don't think that that's going to change. But here's the other thing, Kev, is if you're the Vegas Golden Knights right now, you're not going to draft them anyway.
Right.
Right.
Those selections had to be in a little over an hour ago anyway. So that's already done.
So maybe Marcus Kruger, maybe Trevor Van Riemsdyk. Is that what the...
Trevor Van Riemsdyk was the name that kept coming up.
Well, they were both left unprotected. There were also potentially trades made. And that's all going to be announced tonight.
Oh.
So Vegas apparently made a bunch of trades as well.
Darn Vegas.
Yep.
I'm not a gambler, so darn Vegas.
Yep. Blame this on Las Vegas. It's all you can do. Well, this is just, this is very, very sad and shocking news. Nobody wanted to see this happen.
No.
We hope at some point he comes back and plays for the Blackhawks, but it's, there's no guarantee of that.
There's no guarantee of that. And you look at the core that won those Stanley Cups for the Blackhawks, and obviously you start with Kane and Taves,
yeah,
and Hossa and Keith and Seabrook. Patrick Sharp was part of that original core.
Right.
He's gone. Now Hossa, at least for next year,
right,
is gone. So it's really kind of
quite a gap.
It's a bit of a changing of the guard.
Oh, no.
Perhaps my cotton idea for the uniforms is not a good one, because someone has texted, don't you remember the Seinfeld episode when George gets the Yankees to switch to cotton uniforms and things didn't work out
right
so well? That's, I don't remember exactly what happened.
I don't remember the specifics either.
But it didn't go well.
Your homework assignment is go
watch
that episode.
We'll
I love that
happened.
Homework.
While you're here, I have to ask you this, too. Without a doubt, the Bulls' best player has been Jimmy Butler over the last couple of years. And now for the last 48 hours, all you hear is about the possibility of him going elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, they haven't won a championship with Jimmy Butler, but he's certainly a guy that's going to help your team more than hurt your team. Why would they not want Jimmy Butler on the team?
Well, part of it is, after next year, he'll be headed for new contract territory. And you're a franchise that's sort of in the process. Is, I think John Paxson used the term, we're stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
Because they're not completely blowing it up, but they're not ready to win either. So they need to make some pretty dramatic moves along the way. But like I said to Pete earlier, as much as you keep hearing the Butler rumors, and we heard them last year with Boston.
Right.
Are they going to trade him? Because it's still a pretty gutsy move to be able to do that.
I'd hate to see him go somewhere else. I really like watching him.
Well, I think it would have been tough had he gone to Cleveland, because that would have been a kind of in-your-face
sure
situation.
Sure.
Apparently, he doesn't want to go there. Some reports indicate that Cleveland, they fired the general manager 2 days ago, and so
they
don't know what's happening. There's talk that LeBron James could end up in a year moving on.
Yeah.
So do you want to go there when they might be breaking that team up also?
Right.
So there are a lot of unanswered questions. Might get some answers by tomorrow, which is when the draft will be held.
One more question involving Marian Hossa, good old number 81. Someone has texted us from 309. Can Hossa coach while out?
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Have him help out Coach Quinville.
What?
Just be like a trainee badge.
They just hired two assistant coaches last week. I think they have a pretty full complement. That said, I don't think there's any reason if he's here that he couldn't be of value to players on that team. The guy's got a wealth of hockey knowledge and expertise, and you would think in some ways he's already done that with younger players.
Yep.
So,
does
yeah
he have to sit on the bench and be present and for the whole season?
See, I'm not sure that would be an easy thing for Marian Hossa to do in this situation.
Because he wants to get out there.
I think it would be hard to
plus
sit
you
there.
Have to, if you sit on the bench, Dave, as you know in the NHL, you have to keep getting up and sliding over a space, and he's got the bad skin, and that could irritate his skin more.
I don't know if that would really be a factor.
Oh, all right.
And he'd have to uniform up, wouldn't he?
Yeah, well.
Defeats the whole purpose.
Well, then you're back where you started.
Right.
May as well put him
that
in.
It hurts more than helps.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Dave, thanks for helping.
I hope.
It's Dave, you did help. It's Dave Ennett, everybody. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Speaking of Dave Ennett, who his voice you just heard explaining to us about Marian Hossa's sad situation of not being able to play hockey all of next season because of his skin condition, Dave shared a story with me yesterday that I'm sure you've had this happen where somebody tells you something and you think about it for the rest of the day and then into the next day.
Yeah.
All right. So here's what Dave told me, and I hope this is okay to share on the air.
Well, you should have asked him.
I probably should have asked him. In retrospect, it would have been a good idea to have asked him. But I think it's a great story. Dave's daughter got married on Saturday, and I said to him, how did you not cry during the speech? You know, when they're having the reception, it's customary for the father of the bride to, make a speech. And I know for a fact that when Kylie and Reese get married, when I do that speech, I'm just going to cry like a baby. I'm not going to be able to get through it. Just thinking about it, I'm tearing up.
You should just go up there and start crying, because it's just going to happen.
I may videotape it in advance and
you'll
just
still cry.
I'll run the tape.
You'll still cry.
I would.
And
still...
then you'll cry watching yourself on the tape.
Yeah, I guess I will. Well,
cry me a river, Bill Luff.
Dave said that he rehearsed the speech. He knew what he was going to say, and then he rehearsed it the day before so his wife could see it. And he said he cried like crazy during that, but he didn't cry the night of the actual wedding. And I said, well, what was it about it that made you cry? And here's what he told me. And think about how beautiful this is. He said when his daughter Lindsay was little, he would read her all the Little House on the Prairie books. So they got all through the series of Little House on the Prairie books, and it took years because there's a lot of Laura Ingalls Wilder Little House on the Prairie books. He said, but then because of her age, there was one book left, but then she was too old to get to that last book. So they never read the last book. So in the speech, he said he loved those moments, but he always felt bad they didn't get to finish the series. So he bought the last book and he brought it.
And he read it to everybody at the wedding?
Not the entire book. That would have taken,
no wonder
that
he didn't cry.
A long time to read the whole book.
That would have been awesome.
But he just found a passage in the book that was representative of the rest of the stories. And he said, if everybody will allow me to do this, I want to finish the series out. And he read a little bit of that book. And he's telling me this, and I start tearing up, and I go, I wouldn't, that's so beautiful, but if I tried that, I would just be a mess. I couldn't do that.
I know, but Dave is a performer. He really
is.
No,
he is. Yeah,
and
he is.
And so that was, he practiced, he rehearsed
right.
it, he was ready to roll.
Very smart move. Very smart move.
I can't believe he didn't cry for that, though. That is really sweet.
Yeah.
Was she crying?
Oh, I didn't ask. I don't think she was crying. I think in that particular situation, it's just it probably meant a lot to her, but it probably means more to the dad in that scenario, don't you think?
I don't think so.
It would mean more to the girl,
well,
to the daughter?
To both.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
Just thinking about your dad and
yeah.
you being a little girl, and now you're married, and it's
right.
like dear old dad is being
right.
replaced by new husbands.
Yeah, it's tricky. There's no doubt about that, but I know for a fact – because there have just been key moments already, you know, like when they go away to school. And then I told you this. We've had a couple of moments where it's the four of us. It's my wife and my daughters and I, and we're just in the middle of something. And I just start tearing up. I look over and I go, this is way better than I ever thought it would be. I always knew it would be good, but I didn't know it would be this good. When we were in Mexico, we took this vacation in January. So one of the nights, we're out on the beach in Puerto Vallarta. And I just look over at the three of them and I go, boy, did I hit the jackpot. I mean, I knew things would be good in my life. I didn't know they'd be this good.
That's
and
sweet.
I just looked over and I just started tearing up, you know. And in New York, when we were in New York, it was the same thing. We were in a restaurant. I just look over at the three. For some reason, it seems to be in restaurants a lot. I don't know why.
Well, you guys don't cook, yeah. So that's where you are a lot.
I was going to say, you're in restaurants a lot.
Right. I think maybe the key for me is just stay out of restaurants and I won't cry.
You got to pull yourself together, man.
When we go to a restaurant now, my wife will say to the guy seating us, could you seat us somewhere in the back so in case he just starts bawling up, we're not being ridiculed by everybody in the restaurant?
I mean, you thought it would, you didn't know it would be this good. Enjoy it. Don't cry about
right.
it.
Yeah, what am I crying about? There's nothing to cry about.
It tugs on your heartstrings.
I think it does.
Because you can't believe you... got such a wonderful wife and beautiful kids.
I can't believe I hit the jackpot that way. And then it's also, it's the passage of time where you go, they were just little kids, you know, and now they're adults. And that messes with me a little bit, too.
Don't you look at like 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds and think,
yes.
It wasn't that long ago.
There is that.
Every baby that goes by the window here in the Allstate Showcase studio, Bill always says to me, look at that little kid.
I do.
Go out and ask them if you can hold it.
I don't want it
How
to
would
be
that go,
weird.
Wendy?
That would be weird if I just said that. I just need 3 minutes to just hold your kid. That's all. I'm going to give the kid back.
I'd
hand over references.
I see babies in it, you know, because I still take my boys to a pediatrician.
Yeah. Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because most doctors don't take you till you're 18, which Michael did just turn 18. And so you see little babies in there, and I look around, and then I say to them, I remember when you were that little.
Yeah.
Like, you were so easy then, and you didn't talk back, and you listened to me.
I don't know what it is, but when a kid passes the window, because... You know when kids
every
do
time.
That? Like, yeah, it happens almost, I would say every time.
The
you're
toddler
right.
stomp? Is that what
yeah,
you're talking
it's,
about?
Yeah, it's when
like
a kid.
Like Frankenstein?
They're still, like, they're just learning to walk, so it looks like they're drunk.
Right.
Right? So they're stumbling. They're kind of, look, I can walk. And they walk for three or four steps, and then they have to balance themselves.
Yeah.
So every time I see that, I go, my daughters were just doing that a very short time ago, and now, you know, they're away at college and stuff. And how do we go from A to B that quickly?
We've often brought this up. I don't know if your grandparents told you this. Certainly my grandfather did. You know, enjoy the time because life goes so quickly.
Right.
And you're like, yeah, whatever. The
right.
school year is longer than I can ever imagine. But as you get older, it's
they're right.
It's flies.
You know who told me that? Steve Bertrand told me that when
He's
I was a little
wise
kid.
Man.
I didn't think it was true, but it turned out to be true. So, all right, I'm going to go look for...
I know, you need to pull yourself together. You got to stop injuring yourself because you're feeling sorry for yourself right now because of your leg,
yeah.
as Janice Soprano would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Where's the leg?
I'm just going to go to a restaurant and cry. That's
right.
All I can do. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, this segment was sold to you just based on the title of the book.
Yeah, but now I'm thinking that I shouldn't participate in this because this might be kind of what I'm all about.
Come on.
Too gross, too shrill, too fat, too slutty, too loud. The rise and reign of the unruly woman.
With a small picture of you on the cover. A very small picture.
On the line with us right now, celebrity gossip expert and BuzzFeed culture writer who's written this book, Anne Helen Petersen. Anne, how are you?
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
We enjoy your work over at BuzzFeed. Both Wendy and I are huge fans of yours.
Thanks. That's
You're
great
welcome.
To hear.
I feel like I shouldn't participate in this at all because I have been unruly my whole life.
You've never been these things at the same time, though. So that's...
Well, a couple of them overlap.
Maybe.
Lots of women have said to me, they're like, oh, did you write my biography? When I've told them the title of the book. But I think that's fascinating to me because, you know, these women, these celebrities that are at the focus of the book are oftentimes chastised. You know, they're magnetic because of the ways that they're unruly, the ways that they're too much of something, but they're also like policed and chastised for it. And I think women in real life feel that same sort of thing as well.
We totally do, and Bill did stand up for 10 years before this lovely radio career, and you've often mentioned this, that not you, but a lot of men can look at a woman and say, oh, she's okay, but it's like they can't accept they're funny from a woman sometime,
right.
Which drives me nuts.
It's awful.
Right. I mean, I feel like, you know, even 5 years ago, remember how there was like this huge conversation online of like, can women be funny?
Yeah,
and I think we've maybe moved past that a little bit, even at the time it was ridiculous to me. We've had funny women for so long. And one of my favorite historical unruly women is Mae West, who is like the wittiest, author and basically a stand-up in some ways, like a one woman stand-up show of the 1930s. But I think that like there's just Melissa McCarthy is one of the biggest comedian stars today. She's so much funnier than like Adam Sandler. Like I don't even know if Adam Sandler's funny anymore. But
I don't think anymore.
Not anymore. And I think that she's exploding these understandings of what a woman should do in public spaces. Those roles that she plays. You know, she plays cops and CEOs and that are flamboyant and sexually aggressive and I love watching it. Like those are some of my favorite movies of the last few years.
So what do you think, Anne, is hard for people to accept? And part two to the question, is it different for men to accept a woman like this and different for other women to accept women like this?
Ooh. I mean, I think both, like I've been asked a couple of times, like whose fault is this? I don't think it's anyone's fault per se, like no single, it's not men's fault or women's fault. We all participate, including the media, in these like very subtle ways of agreeing, not even like consciously on what appropriate behavior should be. And so I think sometimes like there's an idea of what a desirable woman looks like from a heterosexual perspective, yeah. and that's really reinforced by men. And then there's also an idea, like women do this too, like if you're talking with your girlfriends and you're talking about someone that you don't like and you're like, oh, that outfit and her makeup and she wouldn't shut up and she got too drunk. And, you know, we internalize those conversations so that we're like, oh, well, what if I gained weight or didn't have a cute pregnancy? Like, would my friends talk to me about me like that?
Right. I think of Lena Dunham a lot, and I don't know her for her acting. I know her for her outspokenness, mm-hmm. and she just posted a right. selfie where she doesn't look that heavy to me, if you want to know the truth, but she's like, I don't care, I'm just going to show people that I have curves. She's been doing this for a long time. What's her big show she's on? Because I don't... Girls.
She's on HBO yeah. on Girls.
See,
yeah.
I don't know her from that. I know her for just kind of being out there and being an unruly woman, and I totally respect that.
Yeah, well, the thing that I think is really fascinating about Lena Dunham is, like, for a lot of women, she is a role model. Like, people, you know, there are a lot of women who think she's, you know, they're the person that they would like to be like. But for me, I just like that she continues to press buttons. Like, she continues to press those sensitive issues. And she's not perfect. Like, she's, you know, like, there are a lot of other female celebrities who maybe are more consistent in the way that they, like, articulate their politics or that sort of thing, or their ideas about race and progressive stuff. But I think that what Lena Dunham does is she's always, always starting a conversation. And those conversations to me are so generative. Like, they make you think about things that you, at least if you're doing it in a smart way and not like a trolly ugly way, they make you think about things that you just assumed or that, like, you took a status quo. Like, when we talk about her body, you know, you just said she's not, you know, she's like just a couple sizes bigger than the Hollywood standard. So why is her body such a big deal?
But it has been for Amy Schumer also. You know, Amy Schumer's talked about how once she was transitioning from being a stand-up to being in movies, every casting agent said, yeah, we have a place for you, but you got to drop a couple pounds. And that seems unrealistic and unfair.
Yeah, well, and also, I mean, the interesting thing, though, is that Amy Schumer is a little bit heavier than, you know, I don't know, Gwyneth Paltrow, let's say, or Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
But she also, because she's blonde and blue-eyed and has, like, this particularly American look to her, mm-hmm. she can still be the lead figure in something like Trainwreck, whereas, like, Lena Dunham could not be cast in a rom-com about her life.
Right, right.
And how
so
come...
That's pretty interesting to me.
I guess my question, Anne Helen Peterson on the line with us, she's written a book, Too Gross, Too Shrill, Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, The Rise and Reign of the Unruly Woman. My question is, you have an executive at a big company, and it's a man, and he does something, and everybody's like, oh, my God, he's so great. A woman who does that same thing, which includes sometimes getting mad, all of a sudden she's bitchy, then somebody goes, I didn't really like her shoes. You know what? She could lose a few pounds, and, boy, she needs to get her hair colored more often. What is it that women get picked on so much?
Well, I think we don't have a lot of, like, our understanding of what power looks like, what power sounds like, it's all male, right? So, like, my Hillary Clinton chapter, it's called Too Shrill. And shrill, you know, I talked to these vocal experts about this, like, shrill is a word that we use to describe what happens to a woman's voice, you know, a voice that is toned like a woman's when they raise their voice in public. And so, really, it's a way of coming up with some sort of derogatory term to say, that's not, you know, we don't want women speaking like that in public. It's a bad thing. And I think, you know, your example about, like, CEO, that sort of thing, is even in the office, there's still not an understanding of what power looks like. There has to be, and it's a way of control, too. So, like, okay, so there's a woman of power. What are, like, very subtle but very effective ways that we can undermine that power? By criticizing the way she looks, by criticizing, and, you know, what kind of mom she is, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's the easy way out, though. I mean, really, if you want to get a girl mad, tell her she's too fat or she's a bad mom. You know, really, that's the easy way to do it.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, yep. but true. Wait, let's take a quick break. Anne Helen Peterson is our guest. She has a new book out called Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, The Rise and Reign of the Unruly Woman. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder on WGN. Our guest is Anne Helen Peterson. She's a gossip expert over at BuzzFeed.com. Her new book is called Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, The Rise and Reign of the Unruly Woman. Let's go back in time 2 weeks, Anne. Kathy Griffin was in the news. I'm a huge fan of Kathy Griffin's work, but she took a picture, a very controversial picture, with a mask that looked like Donald Trump's head, a bloody disembodied head. In her apology, she said that everybody was a lot tougher on her because she's a woman. Agree or disagree?
I just think that the standards for judging women are much more rigid. I think that what happened with Kathy Griffin is a really great example of someone actually being too unruly. You know, like the women in my book, they're all women who, they, for better or for worse, they, you know, they actually aren't completely trespassing. They're not like actually out of bounds. And what I mean by that is they're still very popular. Like Kim Kardashian, she had an unruly pregnancy, but she's still, you know, probably one of the most famous women in the world right now.
Yeah.
Donna, same thing, like trespassing all these things, but still like, you know, still well within the realm of popularity, mainstreamness. But then there are a lot of women who are actually too fat or too queer or too outrageous the way that Kathy Griffin just was. And those people really get, you know, they're either made invisible, they can't get hired, they're ostracized. And sometimes, you know, people can debate about what Kathy Griffin was doing, but she also has a long career of pushing buttons.
Sure.
You know, that's how she stayed relevant. And this one was just, you know, a button too far, as it were.
And in my own personal feelings, and I am not speaking on behalf of the show, only me, I don't think she's funny enough to have pulled that off. I think if she was more talented and funnier, in my opinion, I don't think people would have taken offense to it as much. It's like she didn't have anything to back it up.
Yeah. That's the thing about satire, is it needs to be smart and cutting enough for it to be effective. And I don't think there was anything that smart and cunning about what she did.
What do you make of this? I saw this story yesterday, and I thought about you, actually, Anne, because I knew we were having you on today. There's a model, Carly Kloss, who's very popular, very attractive woman. And there was a story about her yesterday that said that a couple of months ago, on the same day, a casting agent told her she was too fat for one job, but too thin for another job. What do you make of that? And is that something a man has ever experienced in his life ever on the planet once?
So, you know, I bet you, so Carly Kloss, she's probably tall, you know, she's probably like 6 foot.
Yeah.
I bet you even at that, she's probably maybe 120 pounds. And to think that, you know, there, like that is, even there, it's impossible for her to find a place where she's acceptable. That like, okay, so at 120 pounds, that's still too fat and also too skinny.
Yeah.
I think that it shows the impossibility for a lot of women that we struggle against. You know, there are these messages everywhere that are like, love yourself as you are, like, you know, embrace, you know, like all of your curves. But then there are all these other messages that are like, you know, every magazine is like, here's how you need a diet in order to be your best self.
Mm-hmm.
So living within that contradiction is exhausting.
I got to tell you something else that really bothered me. It frosted my butt. Ashley Graham was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And remember, Cheryl Teagues came out and said, that's not right. You know, we've worked hard to stay where we need to be, and it's just not healthy. That's what really bugs me, is women shaming other women.
Right, right. Well, and do you remember, like, Joan Rivers did this to some extent? She was like, Lena Dunham, like, we shouldn't embrace her for being overweight. She's going to die of, you know, heart disease.
Yeah.
And I think that Joan Rivers is very much, like, as unruly as she was, she still was, like, living in a world that told her, you know, you need to get plastic surgery in order to stay relevant. Like, as an aging woman, no matter that you're so funny and you're so talented, like, here are all the ways that you need to change who you are in order to fit in some way. And so, and women internalize a lot of this and then use it to police other women. And what I say in my book is, like, as women, we can be incredibly mindful of, like, not participating in our own self-shaming.
And if you go to any magazine rack, any magazine stand anywhere, and look at popular women's magazines, the covers are filled with ways to better yourself, how to drop 5 pounds, how to do this a little better, how to do that a little. Men don't seem to be as wired that way. So how do we get around that? Is there some way to fix that?
Well, I mean, that's the way that not only magazines sell, but also so many cosmetics and lotions and all sorts
of things. Just playing on the fears.
Making you, yeah, like there is a lack, that there is something that you're doing wrong.
Yeah.
Like there's this great study, actually, about how women started using deodorant. And it was that they, like, the companies that were selling deodorant, and also, and this is also for like mouthwash, they started putting ads in fan magazines and magazines oriented towards women that were like, do you suffer from bad breath? Like, is your date secretly shying away from your bad breath or your bad smell? Well, that's why you should get deodorant, or that's why you should get this mouthwash. And so, you know, a woman might not have known that she was supposed to be concerned about that sort of thing.
Forgive me for not knowing this, but
anxiety.
Was there a time where women didn't buy deodorant? I didn't know that that even existed. Was there a time like that?
Well, like, yeah.
There was? Oh, wow.
For perfume. Well, because, like, deodorant, like, antiperspirant is it's a chemical compound.
Yeah.
Like, it used to be that everyone just stunk. And you put perfume on to cover it.
In the old days, and I've read that, they, you know, used to wear, they didn't wash their clothes very often either, and that's why perfume became really heavy duty, because they,
mask the aroma.
They stunk.
Wow. Kind of glad I live today.
Yeah, well, and people's breath stunk because everyone's teeth were decayed.
Yeah, that's
it
true,
was
too.
Just that once you became alert that you should have anxiety about it, that it marked you as different or bad or unfeminine, then they could sell you a product. It's ingenious.
Beautiful.
We're talking about Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, The Rise and Reign of the Unruly Woman. Ann Helen Peterson on the line with us. Real quickly, before we let you go, another thing, and someone who's featured in your book as being too old. Go ahead.
Oh, Madonna. I was so fascinated by what I found in writing this chapter. You know, I've grown up with Madonna, and she's been an unruly woman since she's been in the public eye.
And she didn't use deodorant for a while either.
Oh. All right.
The thing about her is that, you know, I thought I was going to be writing about, she's proving that you can be sexual at any age. And what I really found is that what Madonna believes is that you can be sexual in an older woman if you look like her. She doesn't think, like, that all older women should be sexual. It's like, if you make your body like mine, like if you, you know, exercise for 7 hours a day and have this incredibly stringent diet and are trying to make your body into that of a 25-year-old, then you can be sexy. And to me, that doesn't seem progressive. It seems regressive.
It does, doesn't
yep.
it? And, you know, you can almost, I hate to pair them off, but remember all the scrutiny Cher was under a couple of weeks ago for an outfit that she wore? That seemed a bit much.
She's always worn stuff like that. It's nothing new.
But the new part is that she's 71 and she's wearing it. That's the new part.
Well, and I think Cher actually can get away with a lot more because she is so confident in it. Like, I feel like Madonna is trying so hard.
Yeah.
So exhausted.
Yeah.
With, like, the effort that it doesn't seem sexual. It's repulsive because of just how much effort she's putting into it. Whereas Cher, it's like she's owning it. You know?
Big time.
She's like, here's who I am.
It seems that way. Ann Helen Peterson is the author we've been talking to, and her book is Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, The Rise and Reign of the Unruly Woman. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it in bookstores. Wherever books are sold, you can find the book. And Ann, keep up the good work. We always enjoy reading your stuff. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Sam.
Ann Helen Peterson. We'll take a quick break. News is next, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You're going to have to talk because I have candied bacon in my mouth. Sorry.
I can do that. I can help you out with that. Dane Neal is here. Dane is the host of the hit show On the Road with Dane Neal, a show that has taken radio by storm. It's the Breaking Bad of radio.
Well, when you say storm, it's the kind of storm that you like. You sit on the back porch, you watch the thunder, you hold the loved ones, you reminisce, but not the storm that we worry about, or they've
got a guy
under a viaduct pretending it's deeper water than it is.
Nope.
You were live in action this weekend. I was listening to you.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I'm not sure the action. Yeah, we were live there. We highlighted the sights, the sounds, and, of course, the flavors and a lot of the cars of the city of Des Plaines. We had them in. You remember this. You know, this was that calm before that storm. And so it was great to see the people at Petting Zoo. We actually had a Patagonian cavy that we named on the air. These are the kind of
what
fun.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
They said it was a relative of the guinea pig.
Oh, yeah?
If I got to choose my relatives, I would choose my cooler, more formidable relatives. Yeah. It looked like a baby kangaroo, which I think
is
higher than guinea pig on the on the cool scale.
Yeah.
And we named it and we had all the people out and you know we just did it all. I mean it was you know you laughed, you cried, it became a part of you.
That's why On the Road with Dane Neal has become such a runaway hit. That's the reason.
A driveway hit.
Yeah, a driveway hit. So Dane, today we're talking about something that Chicago should be very proud of, something that started out good and just keeps getting better and better.
Well, you know what? It keeps getting better because of the principled leadership of some of the people that we have in studio with us. But Bill, you're right. I mean, this is one of those things they say, and I think, and I'm not sure if the lore is correct, that when Taste of Chicago was initiated, it was one of those first kind of urban food events that was huge citywide at that scale, of course, all over the country now and probably all over the world. And so in studio with, but these things don't happen and don't stay great by themselves. You know, you've got to manage it. You've got to kind of shape it, direct it in order to kind of stay with the trends and, and be the kind of thing that people are going to want to make a trip to every year and come to Chicago. So in studio, we have the commissioner of Chicago's Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, the one and only Mark Kelly. Mark, welcome to
Mark,
the Bill
nice
and Wendy Show.
WGN. Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Really appreciate it. Before we talk about the reason you're here, let's talk a little bit about Blues Fest because I know numbers just came out and they were pretty, pretty encouraging.
Encouraging is an understatement. So we moved Blues Fest to Millennium Park and we shifted the lineup a bit. We tried to push blues into the modern age, if you will, and we had over 500,000 people in Millennium Park compared to 180,000 last year, and you know the rave reviews. We learned a lot moving into Millennium Park, so next year we'll tweak it, we'll strengthen it, we'll make it better.
Yeah.
But it was a great festival, and it was free.
Other than just the change of location, that's a huge number difference. What brought about that many more people, do you think?
Part of it's just Millennium Park. It's one of the world's greatest art parks. It's a magnet in itself. And then when you put Blues Fest, it's sort of been losing a bit of its allure. When it started 34 years ago, there was nothing else in town. Now there's festivals right, left, and center. But so we brought a little more clarity to its future. So we had Rhyme Fest as one of so most people would say, well, Rhyme Fest, he's not, but Rhyme Fest loves the blues. He's steeped in the blues. And when he did Gloria, his Academy Award winning song with Billy Branch, it was stunning.
Well, Billy Branch was actually in studio with us last year when we previewed Blues Fest. And this is kind of a tightrope to walk when you have, and Bill, we talked about kind of the history of Taste of Chicago. When you have these iconic events that have so much history and you got those purists out there that don't want things to change, how do you, as the commissioner, how do you do that, right? You want to pay homage to the history, but then again, you do want to kind of, I mean, you've got
look to the future.
Yeah.
So I'm so excited about this year because we honor what 37th year. So it again is a great food and music festival, but you always have to shake it up. You have to push it forward. And I want our audience to assume that they're going to get what they want, but they're going to be surprised by also but what's new. So it's also a cultural festival this year. So there's going to be a parade through Taste every day at 3 p.m. with giant puppets and a marching band.
Wow.
So
I see Bill stuffing the suggestion box giant with puppets. Giant puppets.
There's going to be a street art alley, and where we had a competition and selected four Chicago esteemed street artists who will be creating work on the spot. We'll be hanging it, so there'll be a gallery of street art in Taste, and then it'll be donated to neighborhood organizations. We're going to have the great summer dance festival moves into this. So get your turkey leg and then get on the dance floor. Or you go to the Stomping Grounds. We have 19 Chicago dance troupes all with a percussive bent to them.
Oh, I love that.
Performing. And the list goes on. We have a new stage for kids. We have on Thursday, what is it, July 6th, Sabor de Chicago, which is all Latino. Music, focus, art.
What was the reason behind it? We remember Taste of Chicago's from maybe like 10, 15 years ago, where I just remember feeling just a lot of hot pavement and kind of the same things that we've seen years after years. I got a chance to talk to Mayor Emanuel at the James Beard Awards, and he talked about food being kind of this touchstone on the tourism side, too. Did you guys look at it and say, like, hey, people are coming in. They may come in for the food, but we can share all of Chicago while they're here.
So it's that great food festival, 66 restaurants. We have pop-ups. We have all kinds of food trucks. So the food, you know, Chicago is a culinary destination, and it will be represented that day. So right in front of us, we have a pork and Mindy's. What is this? A pig candy.
The candied bacon?
You got to come and have pig candy,
so
right? Bacon coated with some crazy sugary.
Oh, it's so good.
All natural in some ways.
We have smoked alligator sausage from the Chicago Doghouse, and that's just an example. So, yeah, it's going to be hot that day, and you sweat and you eat, but then we have beer garden, we have a wine garden, we have the CH distillery where you go in and get some great mixed drinks. Mm-hmm. But then there's more now. So you're to be engaged in the cultural life of the city. Sometimes I think Taste started to feel like, well, it could be anywhere. No, it's Chicago, and it's going to have that Chicago gritty feel to it.
I know in the next segment, we'll talk about some of the restaurants that are highlighted, some of the pop-ups, which I always thought was a great thing to bring the restaurants to the festival as
and
well.
And that's a fairly new thing, right? The pop-ups just started a year or two ago.
Yeah. So there's been changes coming for several years.
Yeah.
There was no food trucks a couple of years ago. We moved it from a 10-day festival to a 5-day, more concentrated.
You're happy with that?
The bookings and music are stronger, yeah.
Like the 5-day over the 10?
You know, 10 days is just too much.
Yeah.
Especially with so many other events, many of that we manage. We just finished Blues Fest and then Gospel Fest and the House Celebration. And we have
it's
the,
a quick turnaround.
We just, last night was Caddyshack in Millennium Park,
right.
And the list goes on and on.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then there's much more to discuss with Dane Neal and Mark Kelly, the commissioner. People want to know more about the giant puppets. We're getting a lot of texts. People want to know about the giant puppets, so we'll get to that in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Someone has texted us before we get back to Dane Neal, already in progress. Is Pork and Mindy the evil version of Bill and Wendy?
Yes.
In the Bizarro universe. Actually, it certainly could, and that's very funny, so kudos to them. But it's actually the restaurant locally opened by our good friend, Jeff Morrow, who is also known as the Sandwich King,
mm-hmm.
and he's also on the Kitchen on Food Network, so local guy, kind of a barbecue forward thing with a lot of really kind of cool tricks, and the candy, the pig candy is one of them.
He knows what he's doing. Commissioner Mark Kelly joins us. Mark, your background is fascinating to me. Explain a little bit about what you did that got you here.
Well, I just fell into this job in a way. I had no idea a year ago that I'd be here as the commissioner, but I was at Columbia College for 32 years, the vice president for students. But I also have been a creator of culture and trouble in the city. So the Wabash Arts Quarter, all those great murals in the vicinity of Columbia.
Yeah.
I led that effort, the Halloween gathering, the art parade, the parade of the cultural life of the city is my baby, and many other.
That's excellent. That's where I know you from.
Like
I graduated from Columbia, and that's
where I
know you from.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And see, that's what I was wondering too, where you're trying to take these events and make them more things to more people, and as you've done on the media side and the education side, is kind of tell a story with it, right? Where people leave with more than just, you know, a carcass of a turkey. They leave with so much more.
So you captured it. So back to Taste, back to all the events that DCASE does. We have to be able to answer not just what, but why. Why are we doing this? And so we do Taste. It's a citywide celebration, celebrating food, celebrating the entire city coming together, because you see diversity that's just remarkable there. But it also has to be a celebration of the cultural life of the city. It has to go a little deeper. I want the audience to come there and then to leave like, wow, did I just see that?
Mm-hmm.
And that was cool, and I want more of that.
So we come to Puppet Fest.
That's why there's giant puppets. Right? That's why.
It is Taste of Chicago. People are coming a lot of times. At least that initial inspiration is for the restaurants. So let's go through kind of that list of who we're going to see.
So in the restaurants, in the 5-day restaurants, there's a couple that I want to just pick out. So first of all, the Vivi's African restaurant. It's been there for years, and it's just great. And it's the kind of opportunity to try food that you haven't tried before. Carbon Live Fire Mexican Grill from Little Village, this great Mexican taco stand, if you will. Mm-hmm. And they're there again in some of the pop-ups. I just want to pick them out because of their name. Haka Baka Indian Cotti Rolls. I don't know what cotti rolls are.
But it's fun to say.
But I
Haka Baka.
I want to go to Haka Baka and try the cotti rolls. Yeah.
What you do is you take a waka to Haka Baka.
That's the way to get there.
The Garifuna Flava, A Taste of Belize.
Yeah.
Do any of you know what A Taste of Belize would feel like, taste like?
No.
Tropical drink.
Maybe. We'll find out. All of us. And the fire trucks, there's the Cajun Connoisseur. There's Annie V's, American Glory, Aztec Dave's food truck. I love that, Aztec Dave's mm-hmm. food truck.
No way connected to Aztec Larry's, separate. Which is a totally
separate entity. Totally separate.
But think about it. Culturally, the city has all these events, but culturally, food is an event too. That's what everybody comes together for. So yeah. What a great pairing.
So Japanese, Chinese, Korean. There's a Korean taco stand that's going to be joining us. And here's what's going to be fun. I've put out a challenge to all of the restaurants. It's called the Commissioner's Challenge with a cash prize from DK's for the food stand that is most fun and engaging.
Oh, nice.
So the staff, I've noticed in going previous years, there's every now and then there'd be a stand where they're singing, they're going at it, they're going at the audience. So to encourage, and then the staff have more fun doing that. So it's almost like theater, right? So they're all going to compete against each other. We're going to have judges. We're going to go through every day. We're going to score them.
Good.
So maybe they'll be, you know, trash talking the audience, and if that works, good for them.
Is Fun great. Your middle name? Fun, because it should be if it isn't already.
I like to have fun.
We should do.
We should always be playful in the events of the city. They shouldn't be predictable.
Right.
What we did before only gives us an idea of what we do in the future. So, if you haven't been to Taste in a couple years because you think you know it.
Guess again.
You'll get everything you would expect, but much more.
Mark, can I ask you this? When Taste is over, every year the media makes a big deal out of how many pounds of garbage were provided by Taste of Chicago. What do we do with that information? Every year I hear it and I go, I don't know what to – now that I know how much garbage was provided, I don't know what to do with it.
I don't know what to do with it either.
I mean, are we looking to beat the record? Are we looking to cut down?
Right. It's a very strange thing that's announced every year.
Well, you know, the other thing, the media seems to be fascinated with, did you make money? The goal is not to make money. The goal is just to break even. We don't want this to – it shouldn't cost the city something. It should be break even. But the goal is to bring the city of Chicago together, beckon tourists, and celebrate the city and who we are. That's the goal.
Do you see a spike in people? I'm sure there's a way to check this out through the airports or something. Are people flying in specifically that week?
Oh, we've done economic development studies, and this contributes about $100 million
oh, wow.
to the economic life of the city. Hotels fill up. Tourists love this.
Yeah.
But it needs to be our festival that tourists come to enjoy and not a festival for tourists.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Love that.
Yep. So much to see, enjoy here. And of course, Taste coming up on the 5th through the 9th, and it is free as far as admission. Did you want to, before, in the last minute or so, I know there's so many other things that you're working on, other events maybe this summer people should look forward to?
Summer Dance opens on Friday in the Spirit of Music Garden. We're going to have an incredible Summer Dance celebration in Millennium Park. It's going to take authentic Chicago-created dance forms, footwork, and stepping, and bring them onto the main stage. The Chicago Jazz Festival, the World Music Festival, the Air and Water Show.
How do you mix up the Air and Water Show? How do you bring puppets, trash talk, and...
Well, so let's think of it. I want it to be... Think of it more as a cultural event,
right,
and not just a predictable. So it'll be the ballet.
Oh.
Of the sky will frame a ballet of mechanical objects.
That's poetic.
You are so good.
That's very poetic.
I don't know if that holds up to any interrogation.
It's a high bar.
But,
Well, but, think of all the precision that it takes to show that. No, it is like a ballet in the sky.
So the orchestra will be playing on the beach.
Yep.
And then we'll all be dancing in you know,
traditional garb.
Yeah, we'll all be in costumes. Puppets will show up again, and
tutus on the aircraft.
Maybe.
All right.
And what's the website for people to get information on all the restaurants, dates, and everything they can enjoy?
So go to the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. Go to our website, or you can just Google Taste, and Taste Chicago is the first thing will show up in Chicago, and then you'll see everything that is available to you, and come down. I'm going to Daily Plaza right now because we have a preview of Taste right now in Daily Plaza for the next couple of hours.
Oh.
So I would recommend
people can
listeners
come out
and talk to us and
outstanding.
See what we're doing.
Great
Mark,
work.
Great to see you. Yeah, we're very happy with everything you provided. So thanks. Keep up the great work.
My pleasure
to be
here.
That's Mark Kelly. He's the commissioner, and Dane doesn't have a designation like commissioner, but someday.
Grand Poobah is what I'm shooting for. That's down the road.
That'd be nice. Thanks, Dane. Thanks, Mark. We'll take a quick break and then some news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Kim. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And a lot of times when a celebrity dies, a lot of people blame us, which they shouldn't. They should just blame you.
Yeah. More times than not. It's me.
It's usually your fault.
It's almost always my fault.
I get taken down with you.
Yeah. So we have a penchant. It's mostly me, but I'm going to say we for in case there's a court deposition. Is that I'll mention a celebrity whose name doesn't come up a lot, and then that person,
lo and behold,
will die within a day or two.
It sure seems like
it. That's happened a bunch of times over the last couple of years.
Well, I think you have changed for the better.
Thank you.
Because I think at this point you now mention someone's name, and instead of dying, they just get out of the business they're in.
Right. That happened yesterday. There was an announcement that Daniel Day-Lewis, who I believe is, if not our finest actor, certainly in the top 10. I don't remember ever seeing Daniel Day-Lewis in anything where I haven't
where
marveled.
It was a stinker?
Right. He's not, all right, in Dude, Where's My Car, he wasn't great, but the movie wasn't great.
He was even good in Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah, he was great in Hot Tub Time Machine. Actually, here's an example. This movie came out, Lincoln, about Abe Lincoln.
Oh, right.
And I couldn't stand the movie. I just hated the movie. And even though I hated it, I said to myself, I hate this movie, but Daniel Day-Lewis is really good as Abe Lincoln.
So it wasn't him that ruined it for you. It was the whole story and everything.
Yeah. Somebody described that movie as the story of Abraham Lincoln told in real time because it's a long movie. And all the things you want to happen, like if you were making a movie about the life of Abe Lincoln, you might include the scene where he goes to the theater and things don't go well. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, but everybody does that.
You might include the scene where he poses for the penny. They didn't include that scene.
What did they include?
It's just him walking around.
Him hat shopping?
Yeah, he went hat shopping for a while. He went to a town in Nebraska and said, you should name this after me. If I'm you guys, I come by, I name the city after me. They didn't show that.
I'm a big Lincoln fan, and I haven't seen the movie because that's all I heard was that it was long.
If you need to take a nap, go see that movie.
There's no good part of it.
It just wasn't good. And I mean, I know there's a lot of people who loved it. It was nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards, but I got bored like during the coming attractions before the movie. I got bored with it. It wasn't good. But he was good in it, Daniel Day-Lewis. I don't know who else could play. He can play anything.
He really can transform himself.
So good.
He could be a transformer if he wanted.
He could have been Optimus Prime. He chose not to. Well, now, you know what he says, Wendy? Says Daniel Day-Lewis, listen to this. I quit. He's done. No more movies. No more acting.
I think you foreshadowed this.
I did.
You really did.
I did. I know.
Several times you brought this up.
I'm not one to grab credit for things.
Yes, you
but
are.
But I think in this particular instance, I did foreshadow it. And here's why. Here's my scenario. Tell me if this doesn't make sense. If you're Daniel Day-Lewis and you say to yourself, I'm a pretty good actor. I've been in My Left Foot. I've been in My Beautiful Laundromat. Or whatever it was called.
Laundromat.
Yeah. All right. So if you've been in all these movies and you have all these accolades and people coming out of the woodwork and saying, Daniel Day-Lewis, you are the finest of the fine. You can act your way out of anything. You're so good. And then you read in the paper that The Rock is making 100 times what you make, or even Vin Diesel.
I know. That's what's so disgusting.
Daniel Day-Lewis's best payday is a quarter of Vin Diesel's paycheck. So don't you say to yourself, what's the point in this?
Well, every time, because there was one story that The Rock was the most popular actor or something, and then a couple weeks later, The Rock, the highest paid actor.
Highest paid actor of all time.
And both times you brought up, if I'm Daniel Day-Lewis, how do I react to this? He reacted.
He's the first guy that came to mind. And I know there's other well-accomplished, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino. Those guys are great. They're fantastic actors. But Daniel Day-Lewis just loses himself in the role. I would love to see Vin Diesel play the role of Christy in My Left Foot. I would love to see that.
I was going to say, when you said that, Bill, about how much Daniel Day-Lewis makes, I feel like he's a guy who's in it for the craft, not for the money.
No, that's true.
But still, to know that The Rock is making that much more.
Well,
Vin
I'm sure
Diesel,
he's not hurting, though.
Right.
I'm sure he's okay.
He does okay. He earns a living. There's no doubt about that. And you're right. To your point, he is so good that I think the money is secondary to him. I just think he goes, you know what? I'm just going to give it my best.
And I'll never be as great as Vin Diesel.
I'll never make Vin Diesel money.
If you don't enjoy something anymore, maybe it's time to find something else.
I guess so.
And he can, a lot of people won't admit that.
Right.
He'll be back. This isn't a full-blown retirement.
I don't think so.
I do.
He says he's done.
Well, so did Michael Jordan.
You think Daniel Day-Lewis will try out for the White Sox?
No, he's going to come back as a singer. He's going to start
a
band.
He's going on a new American Idol.
Do you know what he did for a while? So there's a lot of actors, Kevin Hart, who will just take whatever script. If you handed Kevin Hart a script, he wouldn't even read the script. He'd just go, yeah, I'll do this, you know? So he's in a couple movies a year. But Daniel Day-Lewis, there's like 3 years or 5 years where he doesn't make any movies. He just goes, there's nothing that's appealing to me right now. I'm going to take a few years off.
Then why retire?
But do you know what he does when he retires?
Something great, I imagine.
He's a cobbler. He enjoys making shoes. So he, like, for a three-year period, there was a time where he made no movies at all. He just opened up a small shop, and he was a cobbler. Isn't that crazy? Daniel Day-Lewis.
I like it, though, because you do what you truly love.
Right, right. He's not, like, a lot of people would go, oh, I need something that keeps me kind of in the public eye, that keeps my name out there. But not him. He just... He rented a little shop and he, you know, put out an awning and he was a cobbler.
But he's not selling the shoes like Carlos Santana of Santana fame makes purses and
no,
shoes.
No, he would just fix people. People come in and they go, hey, Abe Lincoln, I need these by Saturday. And he'd go, yeah, I can have these for you by the weekend. He was a cobbler, not like an apple cobbler. That would be even more impressive if you're just like hanging out at a pie
shop. Someone
would
have eaten them.
All right. I want that pie that's shaped like Daniel Day-Lewis. That is Daniel Day-Lewis.
There's hair in it.
It's from Abe Lincoln. And actually, you could serve the pie in the giant hat.
I like the way you think.
These are good ideas, Wendy.
Maybe
we're wasting
them. If we can get Daniel Day-Lewis on the line, maybe he won't retire after all. He'll just switch.
I want a chance to talk him out of this.
Let's try and get him badly
to talk him out of this. You know who he's married to?
Yeah, but I can't remember.
All right. We'll just leave it at that.
All right. Let's take a break. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. We were talking about Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
It's Daniel Day.
Happy Daniel Day, Wendy.
Meow, 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 meow.
That's Daniel the cat from
the tiger.
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Yes.
That would be a good movie. If Daniel Day-Lewis set his mind to it, he'd make that the best movie you ever saw.
Because he's good in everything we have seen him in. And Michael wanted to chime in as to what he was great in as well. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you today?
We're very sad.
Shame on you both for mentioning their names in the same sentence.
Who?
Vin Diesel
and The Rock?
And The Rock and Daniel Day-Lewis? You're right.
Right.
You're right.
Best movie ever, and I'd like to see The Rock try and play this one, and that was The Gangs of New York.
Butcher Bill. He's Butcher Bill. Did you ever see that one?
No, I did not.
He's this angry...
Unbelievable movie.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
He should have been Cobbler Ken.
He could have
been. If he didn't win an Academy Award for that, he should have.
Michael, did you ever see him in There Will Be Blood?
No, I haven't, but I heard you mention it, and I'm going to look for that one.
Yeah, you got to find it. He's really, really good in it, and the title pays off at some point. I'll just say that. There is blood.
All right, great.
All right.
Thank you, Michael.
Bye, Michael.
Thank you much. Bye.
He is a great actor, and I do believe
mm-hmm.
that when it came out that The Rock was the highest paid actor, you said, if I'm Daniel Day-Lewis, what
I
do
quit.
I? Yes.
I said that.
I know.
I said, if I'm Daniel Day-Lewis and I hear this, that the, with all due respect to the great thespian that The Rock is.
It's not acting. It's just, he's there.
He's just, you know what he does is I love about The Rock? And you can see him do this in every scene when he hosts Saturday Night Live is he bobs back and forth like whoever's talking. He shifts his whole body weight toward that person in every scene.
I didn't notice that. I gotta
it's look. Really funny.
All right. Well, someone said, you know, if this worked with Daniel Day-Lewis, can you talk about The Rock so he retires?
I wish it were that easy. I don't want him to retire. I think he provides a service because he does these movies where they're just mine. You just go in. You don't have to think when you're going to see a movie that The Rock is in. It just kind of happens in front of you, and you just nod and go, yeah, there he is.
You know, to me, the acting doesn't take center stage in those types of movies. It's the action.
Right. That's it exactly.
So, I mean, no slam to him, really, other right. than, you know, you got a method actor like Daniel Day-Lewis.
Right.
That's why he retired, and you called it.
Who you I swear to you, he's one of those guys. And you know, there's other actors like this. Jeffrey Rush. Do you know Jeffrey
Rush?
Yes,
I do.
Every time I see him in something, I say, boy, he's just not good. He's just great. He's so good at what he does. And there's plenty of other actors who are like that. But it's just crazy if you're one of those select few who just are perfect at it and you find out that... And I don't want them to cut the payday that The Rock or Vin Diesel makes, but wouldn't you be a little upset if you're Daniel Day-Lewis and go... Wow, I can't make that kind of money. These guys.
I do believe Kim pointed it out, saying that...
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care. He is married, by the way, to a woman named Rebecca Miller, who was an actress. I don't think she's been in anything in years, but her father is extremely famous. Her father is Arthur Miller, who wrote Death of a Salesman.
Have you taken over for Rona Barrett's
yes.
column?
Yes. I have. I'm the heir apparent to the Rona Barrett
estate. I'm telling you.
Yes.
You are just filled with Hollywood tidbits, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. I like to know stuff that not only no one else knows, but no one really cares.
I got to be honest with you. You share a haircut with Rona Barrett.
<Thank you. laughs>
And that's not a slam to you.
No, thank you very much. But, like, to me, if you're Daniel Day-Lewis and you're married to Rebecca Miller, I would, like, every couple of minutes, I would ask her a question about Arthur Miller. Just, it would just be on my mind all the time that Arthur Miller's her dad.
You are so starstruck.
I guess.
That's why you and Molly Ringwald didn't work out.
That's what came between Molly Ringwald and me. You're right. Three-time Oscar winner Daniel Day-Lewis, widely considered to be one of the preeminent actors of his generation, is retiring from acting, this according to Variety. The 60-year-old star has played presidents, he's played writers, he's played gang leaders. Who else could play a gang leader and a president? That's a pretty wide scope, isn't it? That's pretty good. In a career that has spanned four decades, he has one final film awaiting release, Phantom Thread. I'm going to see that movie. That's about thread. He plays a spool of thread.
But you know what? His acting is so phenomenal.
Right. You'll think you're watching a spool of thread. When you see this movie, you'll say to yourself, wow.
If I may just interject, I'm going to interrupt you because of a texter.
Yes.
You've just ruined Jeffrey Rush because you mentioned his name.
Oh, I hope I didn't.
What if it comes out tomorrow that he has retired
he's
too?
He's going to also retire. If that happens, I will also retire. If I give him 24 hours. If he retires, I will also retire as my way of paying back to the community. Phantom Thread is a drama set in the world of high fashion. So I may not have been wrong. He may play a spool of thread in this. I would like to see that. It's scheduled to hit theaters December 25th. Great Christmas film. The
it's
Phantom
be another
Thread
one
is
of those
be a great Christmas movie.
Seasons.
It reunites him with Paul Thomas Anderson, who directed Daniel Day-Lewis to his Best Actor Oscar in 2007's There Will Be Blood. You never saw this movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is so imposing in this movie. He always is. I mean, he really just commands a role, but, oh, is he crazy in this. Daniel Day-Lewis intends to help promote the movie, according to a person familiar with his plans. He did not give a reason for his retirement. I bet it's skin condition. I bet he's got what Marian Hossa's got.
Do you Already think you're cracking jokes about Marian Hossa.
I'm just trying to deal with it in my own way. Both of these losses are huge, Wendy. Don't get me wrong. Maybe they could switch roles. Maybe Marian Hossa can be a movie star and Daniel Day-Lewis can play for the Hawks. And then everybody wins.
Maybe you should just go home early today.
He did not give a reason for his retirement, but hinted that Bill and Wendy's mention of this on their show may have played a role. In a statement, Daniel Day-Lewis's spokeswoman, Leslie Dart, confirmed the news. Daniel Day-Lewis will no longer be working as an actor. He is immensely grateful to all of his collaborators and audiences over the many years. This is a private decision, and neither he nor his representatives will make any further comment on the subject.
All right, well, we're out of time because we're going to go over to the stream, but you know what maybe we should do if we don't have anything else planned is talk about some of the best actors ever, because you mentioned some.
Yeah.
You know, you're like Jeffrey Rush, but then it's like Al Pacino, I think you mentioned too, but there are some other ones, and I've got a list.
Oh,
so
I'd love to. All right, we'll
can
do
we
that
just
on the
move
stream.
People over to the stream? Like, yeah. Come on over to our playhouse.
Come to the stream. It's easy.
It sounds... Is there transcendental.
It's the best way to do it is go to either the WGN homepage, and then there's an icon that you click on, and then you'll be there.
Just don't retire between now and then.
No, I won't. We wouldn't retire, Kim.
We can't afford to. We have no money saved.
Right, right.
Go to WGNplus.com, or if you're on the app, there's you can go to it, and you can choose a stream because there's a button in the center. And
do not cross them.
To the left, there's like a little weird symbol that you don't know what it is, but go ahead and click on that, and you can hit our stream.
Right.
And it'll say,
right.
Come join us.
There may be some abdominal discomfort. There may be a little limited abdominal discomfort, but still listen to the show.
Easiest way, go to our Facebook page, yeah. And Kevin has pinned it to the very top of our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. People still use that link to this day.
Yep. All right. A quick break. We'll find out what Steve has coming up on regular radio. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.